D-Maze, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, joined in studio by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. Teron will be on his way to Indianapolis this afternoon for the NFL Combine, but decided to pop in. Hello, Teron.
Hey, what's going on, man? I got done my stair workout in the hill at the Capitol building. Coming back, I said, let me stop by and see my guys real quick.
All right, humble brag there. Got in my really good workout.
Oh, no, get that run in. Brag, man. It is. I don't got
to
brag about
to be out there.
No,
I hear
you.
Nice
live, man.
No, we could all take lessons from Teron about fitness. I could certainly use some more lessons as when it comes to physical fitness. But Teron, you are headed to Indianapolis. The NFL Combine starts this week.
Yeah.
The Tennessee Titans decision makers will speak tomorrow, Mike Borgonzi and Brian Callahan.
Right.
You had a story on ESPN.com. Four prospects the Titans will have their eyes on at the Combine, non-quarterback edition. You mentioned Abdul Carter. You mentioned Travis Hunter, two players we have spoken a lot about. So I want to start by talking about the other two players in your story that maybe Titans fans aren't familiar with. You start with Matthew Golden, the wide receiver out of Texas. What do you like about Matthew Golden?
He's smooth. He's one of those guys where you really admire his movement skills. He's someone that really elevated himself the last couple months of the season. I mean, you look at the playoff run. This guy, you know, it was all the talk initially was Isaiah Bond, but we came away from it like, hey, wait a minute. This Matthew Golden dude is something special too. And he's elevated himself possibly into the first round, but he's at the very least a guy the Titans will have to consider at the top of the second round. Because we know they're not going receiver in round one, but he's just a smooth operator. He reminds me a lot, you know, and when I throw these comps out there, it's not to say he's the same player. It's to give you an idea of what his style of play is like. He reminds me a lot of Robert Woods. I'm talking about peak Robert Woods with the Rams when he and Cooper Kupp were doing damage. Like that same type of change of direction, just handy, always on the spot type of receiver. And I think he would be a guy that would be very reliable for whoever the quarterback is, Will Levis, Shador, Cam Ward, Sam Darnold, Aaron Rodgers, whoever it may be. But he would be an awesome piece for that offense. And he's training with me and D. Mason's guy, Luther Burden, the third. He's training down there in Plano, Texas at Exos with my guy Brent Callahan. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does at the Combine.
You mentioned in the story that he had 19 catches for 411 yards and a touchdown in four games in the college football playoff. The other player you mentioned, Ariante Ursary, the offensive tackle out of Minnesota, 6'5", 339 pounds.
Yeah.
Tell us more about Ursary.
Yeah, so when you look at him, he's a guy that he fits the size for sure. But he's athletic too. I mean, you can't not be an athletic guy and play in a zone blocking type of scheme. But then on top of that, the reason why I put him in there, he's someone we know very unlikely, unless a trade back, they're not going to go O-line in the first round. We know that they need right tackle desperately. And he's a guy I could see flipping to that side. But then I also look at, and he would be top of the second round as well. I also kind of look back at some of the things that, like talking to Mike Borgonzi, he stressed size, right, and how much they want big players. And then I remember the story that Chad Brinker told me where he talked about back in Green Bay a long, long time ago. A lot of people won't remember the name. You guys might, Terrell Buckley. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how they drafted Terrell Buckley despite him not being within their size parameters. And he said, you know, from that point on, and Buckley had a solid career, but Buckley was a very high draft pick, and it didn't really pan out as far as, like, that return on investment. So he always is going to consider the size thing. And I said, well, look, this is a guy that definitely meets that. But then you also just look at, you know, how much they need help at right tackle. Ursary is a guy that, I mean, he's a true people mover, but he's someone that could get on the edge and blow guys up. And like I said, this offensive line needs some retooling.
Now, TD, you and I spoke briefly through text over the weekend. Matter of fact, yesterday, I think it was. and I brought up a couple of names because you threw out a few wide receivers to me. The kid out of Arizona, McMillan.
Yeah, Ted McMillan.
And then obviously Luton Burton Jr. as well. But then you threw another kid out there that you sort of liking to Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah.
And that's the kid from TCU. I forget his name.
Savion
Williams.
Yeah.
Give us a little insight on him because he is, along with, and also Luther Burton III, which I really like. I watched film of him this weekend. Give us a little insight at how these two guys sort of differ, but how they would fit the Titans offense.
Yeah, I smile because I love the versatility that he brings. I mean, if you watch some of his games, you'll see this Joker line up.
And we're talking about Savion Williams.
Savion Williams. You see this Joker line up in Wildcat. You see him line up in the slot. You see him line up semi-attached, like just flexed from the tackle. Mm-hmm. You see him line up outside. He does everything. And he's listed, I believe, as 6'5". Mm-hmm. I want to see what he actually is at the combine because I kind of learned my lesson because Traylon Burks was listed 6'4". You know what I mean? And you get to the combine, he's actually 6'1", 6'2". Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm projecting him to probably be in that 6'2", 6'3", range, which is still good for a guy that moves like that. Mm-hmm. And so you look, and as you mentioned, you do have the occasional concentration drops, mm-hmm. but these are things that you could work with, and these are things that you can improve. I just love the way the yards have to catch, the shiftiness. I feel he's someone, if you want him in the return game, mm-hmm. he could help you there. And he's a very productive player as far as, like, the versatility and what he brings. You know, and the numbers weren't big time.
And that's also what Luther Burton
the
third, that's what he brings as well. As well as the return factor.
Exactly. Luther Burton is my favorite receiver in this draft. He probably had three or four 40 to 70 yard touchdowns called back this year. And I mean, you go back to the 2023 tape. You know, that's the one that you watch where he was putting up numbers. He was a legit, like, top 10 type of pick. And I tell you, it's funny. I saw Brady Cook at the Shrine Week, man. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go up to him and rumble him, man. It's like, yo, like, why didn't you let this guy get off the way he really needed to? You know what I mean? But Brady Cook's a solid quarterback. But I think when you watch him, again, to throw out to give you an idea of what he plays like, DJ Moore, right? You know, that similar running back type of build that can play slot, can play outside, give you all the yards after catch that you could get. And I love guys that give me the free yards, man. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what he brings.
Now, also, the kid out of Oregon, Tez Johnson.
Yeah.
He's a little bit undersized, 5'9". He may measure in a little bit shorter than that at the combine. So you're talking about 5'8", 5'9". But he does give you that explosiveness that the Titans offense needs as well.
Like, if I'm him, I'm wearing shorts with pockets and I'm putting rocks in there, man. Because, you know, right now his weight is like 165. That's what he was at the combine. At the Senior Bowl. But what also he was at the Senior Bowl was trouble in one-on-ones. You know, and as we talked about, it could be a little skewed, but this dude was creating separation. And I'm talking about instant separation off the line, you know, when they came up to try to press him. He will probably play in the slot, so he'll get that little bit of, off of the ball, so that way it'll give him a little bit of advantage against the press type. But he's someone that, even though he's smaller, he'll work the middle of the field. And I really like that because what it tells me is that he got heart. And he got dog in him because he's going to play bigger than what he is. Unlike Quentin Johnston, who is 6'3 and plays like a 5'9 guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I really like what he brings to the table. He's reliable. He's someone that could also help you in a return game. He was highly productive at Oregon as well, especially last year with Bo Nix.
Teron Davenport is with us as we prepare for the combine this week. And, of course, the Titans brass will be speaking tomorrow. We'll be taking note of that.
Yeah.
Teron, as we set the table, who are the quarterbacks that have the most to prove, the ones that might be able to raise their stock? Because we know the usual things happening with Shadori's not throwing.
Yeah.
So who could take advantage of this time? Who could maybe increase their stock and get on the radar here?
There's a few guys. Tyler Shaw from Louisville. He's starting to draw some. Like, he's the next guy that they're thrusting up there. And look, man, like, he's old enough to watch Sid Fernandez strike Dale Murphy out. You know what
there
I mean?
There you go. I know what you mean. D-Mace, you're with me, right? El Cid?
Yes.
Mets?
But,
come on.
But, I mean, he's
I'm speaking your language, TD. I don't know how many people in Nashville are.
Well, that's why I mentioned Dale Murphy, because right. I know this is Braves country.
That's right. Yeah, that yeah. Kinda, and the Braves for, fans followed you.
For, oh, for the younger generation, okay. That's yeah. Before Chipper Jones, so that might give you some perspective. But I think he's 26, 27. He's been in college. He just finished, I believe it was his sixth or seventh year in college. You're seeing that.
That used to be like a joke.
COVID
hey,
stuff.
You've been in college for 7 years. Yeah, you must
Rodney
have been probably.
He made a career out of yeah. it. You know what I mean? But he's someone I could see really making a mark. He has a big arm. He could throw the ball. I like watching Louisville. He and Ja'Cory Brooks, you know, who's another receiver, D-Mace, you might want to check out Ja'Cory Brooks. He reminds me of Stevie Johnson, like that shifty type. But staying focused on the quarterbacks, I really think Kyle McCord has a big arm. And I like him at Syracuse. You saw what he did to Miami, you know what I mean? And he finally got an opportunity in an offense at where he was at Ohio State. He transferred. I think he's another one. There's a few, but those two are the first ones that come to mind. And I think, hey, look, Jackson Dart, like, he makes those big-time throws, and he could show off his arm. So I think he's another one that could kind of help himself as well.
We had a caller last week, and look, this is just the – this is typical every year of college quarterbacks that we watch a lot, mm-hmm. hear a lot about, mm-hmm. and you want to know what his stock looks like. So let's give me the scouting report you see right now on Quinn Ewers.
So Quinn Ewers, to me, he's good at everything but a master at none. Or you know what? I'm not going to say good. He's solid at everything but a master at none. He's the guy, and by the way, he's actually the one throwing to Matthew Golden and Luther Burton, the third, at Exos. Abdul Carter is working out there as well. But he gives me backup quarterback, system quarterback type of vibes. I don't see him as a guy that will come in and elevate your program.
Okay. Let's ask you a couple of non-player things that are going to be on the table and discussed here soon, because I believe this is right. The competition committee gets together and starts talking about these things at the combine. Is that right?
Yeah, they start talking about it at the combine. It kind of gets worked out at the owner's
meeting. Yeah. All right, so give me your opinion. Should the tush push be a legal play, or do they need to look at that?
It's part of the game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Do you?
Yeah,
think
I'm a little jaded, you know, because that's home team. But, you know, it's part of the game.
So you're okay with it?
I'm okay with it.
No tweaks at all?
No.
All right, because I'm on the other side.
Really?
I don't like the rugby principle of you can aid the runner. Push the quarterback in the back and make it be just like the reverse tug of war. Instead of pulling, everybody's just pushing, and you're trying to push the pile.
Why not counter it and have the linebacker push the D-tackle?
Well, we could talk about that rule. Should that be allowed?
But then you're not going to – when you even though the NFL has no problem with doing this, when you open up that jar, you open up the Pandora's box. Because I can say, well, what if I'm running a football out in the open field and a gang of people get up, you know, to tackle me? My man can't then come and push me and another guy push him?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. It used to be a rule that you could not, quote, aid the runner. You could not –
You couldn't push him along.
Yeah. Well, not pick him up, but you couldn't push him along.
Yeah, I
and
thought
do that.
You couldn't lift him.
I thought years ago that you could not.
I think you couldn't lift him.
Remember the famous play, the Bush push, mm-hmm. right? The USC at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I don't think that was completely legal at the time, or at least it was debatable at the time because there was a rule.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just not remembering this.
No, it's good to look at that because obviously, that's something the Eagles have specialized. You've seen some other teams stop it. I just think it brings into strategy. Like, you look at Chris Jones, he lined up. Like, he, in essence, created a bench. Like, he lined up sideways, mm-hmm. you know, in the Super Bowl. It didn't exactly work, but I thought that was an interesting strategy.
All right, let's go to another one that I think it is absolutely time to tweak. Let's get rid of the onside kick.
Really?
Yes. They've taken out all of the weights.
I'm in agreement with this one.
What's the percentage of a team recovering the onside kick?
Yeah.
It's almost impossible.
They've virtually gotten rid of it if you look at it, right? Because you have to declare it, so there's no element of surprise.
Well, this is what I'm getting at.
And you can't do it before the fourth quarter.
You can't do it until your fourth quarter. You have to be down, I think, by two scores or something crazy like that.
But let's put something in that gives a team that's trying to make a dramatic comeback a chance, equivalent chance. Okay?
What would that be?
All right. Let me just throw one out there. This is where I think analytics would come in and try to create the probability, right?
Okay.
I got a C- in my one probability in statistics at Vanderbilt, and I never took another class. I thought, hey, we're going to talk about batting averages and stats for football and basketball. This is great.
I had the wrong class, man.
We didn't talk about that. But you do learn a little bit about how this works.
Yeah.
So let's say, how often should a team that's trying an onside kick in the back where we grew up, onside kick, how often should you be able to recover an onside kick?
As many 10%? Times as you want.
20%?
Yeah, I'd say 1 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. 1 out of 10 at
now?
Least.
Or back in the day?
Back in the day. I think the number for a long time was around 15%, mm-hmm. somewhere, give or take, in a given year, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's about right. So let's create an offensive down, where you say, we want to take a shot at it. It's fourth and blank. And the yard line's important too, right? I'm not going to give you the ball on the 35-yard line. You're trying to come from behind. So let's put the ball, this is just my proposal off the top for discussion. Let's put the ball on your own 15-yard line. And it's fourth and X for the team trying to keep the ball.
Fourth
you got one
20.
Play. 20?
Fourth and 20.
Okay. Fourth and 20 from the 15. Does that create the 15%?
I think it's
ish.
Yeah, it may be a little
bit. It's going to take a great play.
The fourth and what happens if you get the. So it's a true first down.
You keep the ball.
Okay.
You keep the ball.
Okay. You know, a lot of coaches will tell you, hey, listen, I don't have too many plays on my call sheet for fourth and 20.
Right.
But this, in that
exactly.
case,
and look, you
they will start creating them.
You shouldn't get it most of the time. That's what I'm saying. The 80%, 85% of the time, you shouldn't get that. Because
I like that idea, actually.
Is that a better substitute than let's go through the charade and the shell of an onside kick?
Yeah, I think it's more exciting. And
yes.
then also staying in the theme of player safety, right? Because you know what happens in the onside kick, that first wave, they're going through and they're trying to wipe
out. Right, and they've taken they've legislated that part of it out.
Yeah.
That's how you used to be able to get it. You just collide and create chaos. You can't even do that anymore.
That's a good. Hey, you know what? Tomorrow.
Okay, I didn't get you on the tush push, but I got you on the onside kick.
I'm going to try to find Vrabel, and I'm going to mention this to him.
Fourth
because you know he's
big.
He's big on the competition committee. That's a good idea.
Yeah, because I wonder what the probability this season on fourth and 20s. What was the likelihood?
And again, the key is it's on the 15. You're on your own 15.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're on the verge of scoring if you get it. But now you do have the ball back.
To create a series.
Yeah.
I like that.
I wouldn't put it on the 50. I would put it on like the 20 or the 25 because then it sort of resembles where you would –
Recover an onside kick. Okay, we can talk about that. We can tweak it.
Yeah.
Ron, can you stick around for one more?
Absolutely, man. I know we got to pay some
I got
bills,
the juices
so,
flowing.
Yeah,
I got the juices flowing.
Yeah, man.
615-737-1025. If you have questions for Teron, he is being nice enough to stick around for an extra segment. We'll, of course, talk to Teron Davenport about our favorite subject, quarterbacks. We'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game. D-Mace, Fingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, joined in studio by Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter. Teron is headed up to the NFL Combine this afternoon. Looking forward to everything that Teron will report from Indianapolis. Teron, we would be remiss if we did not bring up the quarterbacks. You were on with Jared Stillman last week. You mentioned the name Sam Darnold around Jared Stillman. He gets a tingle in his loins. That's the PG way of saying it. You told him you think there's a chance that Sam Darnold, if I recall correctly, that Sam Darnold could be the Titans' starting quarterback next season. When you think about this entire situation, we can touch on it from so many different angles, but when you are looking at Sam Darnold as a fit for the Titans, what do you see as the match there? Why would it be a good fit for you if Sam Darnold would end up being the Titans quarterback?
Well, I think you look at the similarities to the Alex Smith situation. You know, talking to Mike Borgonzi, he really stressed the importance of building a roster and then dropping the quarterback in there. And he kind of hinted at, well, I don't want to say hinted, but it led me to believe that they may not draft a quarterback and build a roster around him, right? But you go back to the Alex Smith situation. They had the number one pick, the Chiefs, that is. They selected Eric Fisher. They traded for Alex Smith, and he took care of things for the first 3 years. Then the fourth year, they acquired Patrick Mahomes, and Patrick Mahomes took over the following year, and they haven't not made an AFC championship game since. So I think you got to look at that. And 27 years old, that's what Alex Smith was. Darnold happens to be the same age. They're two guys who are former very high draft picks, talented guys who showed flashes, like towards the end when they're transitioning to a new team, teams in the case of Darnold. And I think, you know, those are the ties, the similarities. He is a system guy. You know, he has some good timing. He's pretty accurate. Now, the processing, yeah, that's something that could probably improve. But what quarterback is the perfect quarterback? So I could see that. I personally, if I'm the one making a decision, I'm scarred by that Lions game and by the Rams game. I don't want a quarterback where everything has to be perfect in order for him to function at peak performance level.
You mentioned that, and that is something that we've talked about, you've heard a lot about from your fans and your readers and your listeners. It was a perfect situation for Sam Darnold in Minnesota. Mm. The coach, the pass catchers, the system, everything like that. It worked out incredibly well for Sam Darnold. I think the skepticism from a lot of people is, well, if you put him in a situation that's less than ideal, that he will not be that quarterback.
Right.
So, but to your point, not every situation is going to be perfect. So when we have that conversation about, well, he's not going to be playing for Kevin O'Connell and he's not going to have Justin Jefferson, I mean, how much stock do you put into that ultimately when determining how successful he's going to be?
I mean, I think not having the second best receiver in the league is a big step down. Not to mention Jordan Addison and T.J. Hockenson and Aaron Jones in the backfield. And again, McConnell, I think that's a difference. I say second best because, you know, Ja'Marr Chase is the best in the league, but, you know, that's a different conversation.
Well, if you look at it now, we've talked a lot about Darnold, and obviously because he will be the one that's more than likely, if they don't franchise tag him, he will be the top guy coming out. But how do you view a guy like Carr, if indeed New Orleans do try to seriously move on? Now, they've hinted, and there have been articles out about them possibly moving away from Carr, but we're not going to know anything until really closer to the draft, unless they get something that they just can't refuse. But how do you see Carr?
So Carr, to me, and it's interesting because you have the ties between he and Callahan from the Raider days. And I want to say Ziegler was in place when they drafted. Don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure. But anyhow, with Carr, to me, he lacks one of the three core principles, right? Timing, accuracy, decision-making. There's decision-making with him where it's like, come on, dog. Like, what are you doing? Why did you do that?
It appears that Dave Ziegler and Derek Carr overlapped with the Raiders.
Okay. So, to me, that's the one thing that's missing is the decision-making aspect. If you go that route, I think you're creating a two-year bridge. Darnold, to me, is the exact situation with Alex Smith. So you're creating a two-year bridge. So in 3 years, you better be ready to trade up and get a guy because I don't think you're going to have too much longer with Carr. But at least in the meantime, you know, he's someone that could probably keep Callahan employed, which, you know, I personally hope is the case because I think Callahan deserves the opportunity to implement his scheme and get his players in, et cetera.
And I think that's why it's going to be critical for Callahan or for the organization as a whole to make sure they marry both what the organization need as well as what Brian Callahan needs to succeed. Because he's probably looking at it as, hey, this is my year. I got to either show them yes. that this works or they're going to replace me, plain mm-hmm. and simple. So what do you do? Do you do what's truly – you got to find a way to do what's best for both the organization as well as your head coach that you're going to be evaluating.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why I think ideally to me, Derek Carr would be the best blend of both worlds. And this isn't like a 1,000% endorsement on Derek Carr, but I don't think he's going to cost 35 to 40 million like Sam Darnold will. Like if you do that, like that's bad decision making to do that. You know, off of one good year, you're signing a guy to a $35 to $40 million contract. I don't do that, you know. So I think Derek Carr. Now, the one other thing that I absolutely, if I'm Callahan, like I'm standing on the table and mm-hmm. jumping up and down and saying you better not get Aaron Rodgers mm-hmm. because it's a catch-22. Things go well. Oh, well, I would hope he would do well with Aaron Rodgers. Things go bad. Man, this guy couldn't even make it work with Aaron Rodgers. You know, so no yeah. matter what he does, he's done. You know yeah. what I mean? It's bad.
Well, okay, look at it from this standpoint. Now, let's move off of the quarterbacks. We've talked young wide receivers. We talked quarterbacks. Now, apparently, there could be two other veteran quarterbacks, wide receivers, on the market, DK Metcalf and Tyreek Hill. Obviously, we know Tyreek Hill would come with an enormous mm-hmm. Price tag as well as what you have to give up to get him.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about a guy like DK Metcalf?
So, Metcalf, to me, I felt he got a bad rap coming out, you know, where they said he couldn't run routes, this, that, and the third. He learned how to be a route runner. Debo Samuel will be available, mm-hmm. too, but the injuries and stuff.
Yeah, I think he has more. His days are way past him, I think.
Yeah. I think Metcalf would be a nice compliment to Calvin Ridley. Ridley playing Z, Metcalf playing X. I like that mix. You just got to go out and get somebody, you know, that Adam Humphries type. You know, there's actually a guy out of Washington State, Chisholm. Mm-hmm. Check him out if you get a chance. He's very Adam Humphries-like. Mm-hmm. He was really good at the Shrine. But, yeah, I think Metcalf, but you have to compliment it with somebody, mm-hmm. you know, that quick, getting open type of guy. Metcalf is going to command a lot on the outside just as far as the way he could get vertical and things like that.
Yeah, I do believe they truly need a slot guy. They mm-hmm. need a guy that can do multiple things, a guy that can get open in that short window yeah. and work the middle of the field. Yeah. Which leads me to this, and I know this hasn't been a point of emphasis for the Tennessee Titans, but maybe, just maybe, it should be. I know – We saw the progression or the development of Chick Okonkwo. He's starting to get a little yeah. better. But I look at the two tight ends in this draft, the two top guys. Man, you missed on Brock last year. These two guys can be difference makers from day one. The kid out of Michigan and obviously the kid out of Penn State.
Yeah, they could be difference makers from day. I love the way Tyler Warren, he runs mm-hmm. that seam route really well. He's not like a burner or anything mm-hmm. like that, but he runs that seam route kind of like the Colts used to use Dallas Clark.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And just he'll get rocked, but he's going to catch it and do something for you. And you could put him on the outside and mm-hmm. take advantage there. I think he's kind of out of the mix, though, mm-hmm. because – if you trade back, yeah.
About a scenario where you're yeah. trading back.
I mean, he's one of those guys that will come into play if you trade back. He's one of the better, I would say, one of the top five tight end prospects in the last 5 years. So if you could get something like that, I mean, that's somewhat generational, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah, I mean, I like that. I think Chig, and not only was it checkdowns.
I like the yeah. development that Chig yeah. has shown.
Yeah, and not only was it checkdowns, it was also, like, you know, screens mm-hmm. and – they had plays designed to get him the football. So I think he could continue to progress. I've always liked Chig since his Maryland days.
All right, I got two things that we're going to keep circling back to. These mm-hmm. are not exactly new questions, but I think it's interesting as we monitor this through the process. And you get into this process from the start. So I'm guessing what you say now on certain guys might be different in a week, might be different in a month. So – one thing I'm trying to gauge is if you're the Titans and you take the quarterback at number one and don't trade down. And that's your only pick in the first round. You don't have a third round pick. We'll see, you know, all of these things, right? You know the roster is what it is. We've discussed some of the free agents out there. Does that kid, whoever it is, Shador, Cam Ward, whoever, does that kid have a chance to succeed? Or are they better off going another route and building the roster more so that the next young quarterback has a better chance to succeed at the start? So let's just take the roster as it is with a quarterback at the one position. How concerned would you be of the environment that he's going into?
I would want to build the roster out a little bit more. But here's the thing. Free agency is still in front of it. So it depends on how free agency goes. I mean, you got Stephon Diggs. You got, you know, and I'm not saying sign these guys or acquire them, but you have different options that you could
right.
bring on and to we, make it more conducive for the young quarterback's success.
Right,
you
right.
better do something with the offensive line, right? So those are the first two things that I think have to happen in order to have a young player succeed. I would be more in this type of situation. I would be more in the school of, okay, draft Abdul Carter.
Okay. Well, I mean, you've led me to my second question, and that is, once again, I think in a perfect world, if you could move down a few slots, get some more assets, and still get a guy you really like, I like the sound of that for the building the roster. But let's say, again, maybe it's not the great year to get the first pick because you're not getting great offers for that pick. If you had to pick Hunter or Abdul Carter, I think you've already given your answer. But who is the better first overall pick?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy. It's Abdul Carter.
Okay.
I think there's
Tell me why you think this. Okay. We kicked this around on
right.
Friday.
Yeah, I mean, this is checkers, not chess. I just watched what the Eagles did to Patrick Mahomes. I go back a little bit further and watch what the Buccaneers did to Patrick Mahomes. I look at the way the Titans have played Patrick Mahomes, and I say, wait a minute. I notice if you're able to make this guy get off his block and impact him, you kind of even your chances out. And I think you look at Abdul Carter, what he brings. You look at the Notre Dame game, how he just took that over with one arm. I think I want that because I want to try to emulate that. Travis Hunter is an excellent prospect. Don't know what position he'll play, but he's an excellent prospect. But to me, the hierarchy is quarterback, pass rusher, pass protector. If I got a chance to get one of the clearly best pass rushers in the last couple years, I'm doing that.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. Teron, thank you so much for joining us for an extra segment. Safe travels to Indianapolis. We can't wait to read all of your reporting from up there.
Yeah, appreciate it, man.
615-737-1025. Before we end the show, I think it's only appropriate that we allow Derek Mason to gloat a little bit. So we're going to do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingit, 1025-1063, The Game.